Welcome to ACFAS On Demand, the official podcast channel of the American College of Foot and Ankle Surgeons. During these podcasts, you'll listen in on engaging conversations from a panel of experts discussing the science of foot and ankle surgery while sharing out the latest trends and best practices. The views expressed on this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of the college or its members. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, welcome to this ACFAS on-demand industry-sponsored session from Bone Support. We would like to thank them for their support of the American College of Foot and Ankle Surgeons. Enjoy the episode.
This is an orthopedic expert discussion on the use of Bone Support's product CERAMENT G. Some of the uses discussed here may not be approved or cleared by FDA. The experts are independent and the content is not in any way influenced by Bone Support. Please refer to the Instructions for Use, IFU document for official indications, contraindications, and mixing information.
Well, greetings and welcome to this ACFAS podcast that is supported by Bone Support, in which we're going to talk about Bone Support's product, CERAMENT G, in the treatment of osteomyelitis. I am honored to have been asked to moderate and host this podcast. My name is Warren Joseph. I'm a podiatrist and infectious disease specialist. I spent most of my career in the Philadelphia area, now living in Arizona, live in Sedona, and doing my ID work down in the Phoenix area. And I'm currently an adjunct clinical professor at the Arizona College of Podiatric Medicine at Midwestern University. So I want to welcome you, and I will let my two esteemed panelists also introduce themselves, give a little bit of a background of who are they are before we get into the discussion. So we're going to go age before beauty here. So let's start with Dr. Alan Block, who probably needs no introduction, but go for it.
So I'm Alan Block. I currently practice in South Carolina with Palmetto Surgical State Podiatry Associates. I presently am on the board of the APMA, as well as the Podiatry Foundation. And that's about all I'm going to tell you about that. So on to you, Jason.
Yes, good to be here. You know, thank you all for the opportunity. My name is Jason Mendeville. I am a podiatrist out in El Paso, Texas, currently with Orthopedic Surgeons Associates. I'm also the medical director and co-founder of Pulse Amputation Prevention Center. So thank you all for the opportunity and looking forward to it.
Well, I'm really pleased that both of you guys could join in today to discuss this relatively new product, which is CERAMENT G, particularly in the treatment of osteomyelitis of the foot and ankle. I do want to give some disclosures. You'll see on the title, and I mentioned it already, that this is being sponsored by Bone Support. And I do want to disclose that I'm also a consultant to Bone Support. So, and I believe the other guys are also, and they can certainly chime in with that as we get to their talk. What we're going to do is I'm going to start with a little introduction. I'm sure this is a relatively new product to many of you, but the antibiotic that is mixed into it is not new. So I want to go a little bit into gentamicin, how gentamicin works, because what we hear a lot is, hold on a second, most of our osteomyelitis is caused by staph and strep, including MRSA. Why would I use a product with gentamicin? Gentamicin only really works against gram negatives. So I want to clarify some of that and talk about the drug and how it works. But first, you know, let's take a little history lesson here. I teach a course at the Arizona College on evidence-based medicine and research. And in fact, the first lecture was just yesterday, the day before we're recording this. And when I talk to the students, I use one of the comments made by Dr. Brad Spellberg, who's chief medical officer at USC Keck in Los Angeles, well-known infectious disease specialist. And to paraphrase him, he says, evidence-based medicine beats eminence-based medicine. And I talk about that to our students, and I used that yesterday when I was speaking to them in the first class. And one of the examples I used was osteomyelitis. That's a clear situation where the eminence basis beats the evidence base. What do I mean by that? It doesn't matter where in the world I lecture or to what specialty I lecture. If I say, how do you treat osteomyelitis? Everybody says the exact same thing. You need 6 weeks of IV antibiotics after aggressive surgical debris mop. Well, I was taught that 45 years ago. It was taught to me by somebody who was probably taught it 20 years before that. And you know, there's not a single lick of human evidence to support that concept of 6 weeks of IV antibiotics for the treatment of osteomyelitis. In fact, we've got really great evidence now to support alternative therapies such as orals for osteo. We have different uses of surgeries. There's aggressive surgery, there's conservative surgery. There are different durations, as short as 10 days and as long as 6 weeks. There's a lot of evidence out there on osteo. It's just not for the 6 weeks. So I think we need to look at new approaches and new evidence-based approaches to osteomyelitis. And that's what I'm going, and we as a group are going to talk about today. Now, what Cerenin G is, it's a calcium sulfate hydroxyapatite bone matrix, pretty much, that has combined in it genomycin, which is applied directly into an osteomyelitic bone. And Alan and Jason will be talking about their techniques in a little bit. But again, why genomycin? Genomycin was first discovered or first marketed in 1964. This is a 50-year-old drug. It's been around forever. I remember doing my infectious disease fellowship back in the early 80s. You know, we only used genomycin for severe gram-negative infections. Why? We were concerned about it being nephrotoxic and ototoxic. And frankly, aminoglycosides were scary drugs to use. The dosing of them is not particularly easy, all when you're using IV dosing. But genomycin happens to have some really interesting principles. It is a very broad spectrum antibiotic. Not only does it work against most gram negatives, it also is highly effective against gram positives, including staph, strep, and MRSA. So why don't we think of genomycin as first-line therapy for staph and strep? Well, because it's a dangerous drug when given intravenously. So we had all these other drugs. Why would I use genomycin when I can use cefazolin, you know, one of the first generation cephalosporins? So the drug itself is broad spectrum. But what makes it really interesting when combined in this product, Cerenin G, is that you get a very, very high level of genomycin right at the site of infection. Now, what do I mean by high level of genomycin? Well, the MIC, the minimal inhibitory concentration for staph against genomycin is 4 micrograms per milliliter. The level you achieve when you instill Cerenin G into a bone is 2,500 micrograms per mil. That's 500 plus times above the MIC. So it doesn't matter whether it's shown resistant on a culture report or sensitive. You are 500 times above that MIC. The drug is going to work against the staph. And on top of that, genomycin is what's known as a concentration-dependent killer. If we look at pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics of antibiotics, we have time and concentration-dependent killers. Time-dependent antibiotics are those that you have to be above the MIC for a prolonged period of time. Concentration-dependent killers mean the higher the concentration you can get, the better the kill is going to be. Well, again, you're 500 times above the MIC. You get very rapid killing, and that time above the MIC and that concentration above the MIC stays there for about 28 days. And not only that, even when it's gone, when the genomycin's gone, genomycin has a unique property called a post-antibiotic effect, which means even when the antibiotic is gone, the organisms still continue to die. So right off the bat, I'm handling the antibiotic side of it. I just wanted to let you know, forget this, oh, well, genomycin's not an ideal drug to use for MRSA, to use for staph. The fact of the matter is, when you're instilling it, you're getting that high of a level, it's killing the organisms, it's killing them rapidly, and it's staying present for at least 3-4 weeks when it's instilled in the bone. So I just wanted to cover that. I wanted to get that out on the table straight up, that genomycin is actually a very good drug to use in this situation. Now, what I would like to do is I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Block because, you know what, this is casual. Alan, I'm Warren, Alan, Jason. You know, we've all known each other. Listen, so Alan, you know, most of our listeners are probably familiar with the older times, you know, polymethylmethacrylate beads where you have to form them and put them on a wire or suture and you instill, mix up, admix a whole bunch of antibiotics on the back table. Or, you know, the osteoset beads, which I never really liked because it caused a massive inflammatory reaction.
Yep.
But, you know, you kind of mix all this stuff together. You don't know what you're putting in there. I don't think they're familiar with CERAMENT G, how it works, and, you know, just from the mechanics of it. How, you know, how does it come prepared? How does it have to be mixed? If you could explain that, that would be great.
That'd be great. Certainly. Absolutely. So, you know, going back to the osteoset beads and the polymethacrylate, if you remember, we used to put them on wires and we'd wire them through, and then you had to bring the patient back to take them out, usually out of certain, you know, didn't do it bedside. And they made a mess, especially some of the beads. They'd break down, and the nurse would call you in the middle of the night because this white pus was flowing out of the wound, and it turned out to be nothing more, right, than the material itself. And it was releasing the beads. This is very unique for a few reasons. First of all, it is flowable, and that's the creation of it. Now, realize CERAMENT G has not been around that long, but CERAMENT has. And what's important here is the flowability. Now, I've been mixing antibiotic in it for a long time. I would just choose whatever came out, and I'll go through the protocol. But what this allows you to do is two things. Is I think Jason's going to talk more about the chronic things like that. When you first see osteo, you know, we get nervous because a soft tissue infection, you can see and you know you've given an antibiotic, and a week later they come back in and it's healed. You can tell them to stop taking it. But bone always scared us a little bit because you have to wait for an x-ray, and the x-ray always lags behind. And you would take that x-ray and you're watching the metatarsal head, for instance, disappear week by week. And, you know, you don't know how long to keep them on the antibiotics, 6 to 8 weeks. And we turn it over to infectious disease, but we're not sure when have we killed it? Have we eradicated it? Did it stop? Is it still functioning, right? But here's the thing about this. Two things is the patient population we're talking about. I'll get the patient comes to me and they have an MRI and says they have osteo with this. So my first step is I do a bone biopsy, usually in my office. And I think it's important to understand two things. Why do I do it in my office? Because I no longer have to schedule a case. A lot of these people are neuropathic. And even if they're not, I numb them up. It's not a problem. A lot of people, a lot of doctors still do office surgery. And I think it's great. You numb the patient up in the office. You're not knocking them out. So it's no different. It does two things. One is you get immediate results. Now, I happen to use PCR testing. And so I take that bone biopsy, I put it in the PCR testing, and I usually have it back in 1 to 2 days. So in 2 days, I know if that patient, A, has osteomyelitis and what they're dealing with. And number two is I've already scheduled them for surgery. Now, CERAMENT G, as you just heard Warren say, you understand that the MIC is 2,500 times what you need is a killing concentration. So I can now take that patient to the operating room, and I can very simply put a trocar in. And here's the important about the trocar. You don't have to make an incision. You just put the trocar through. So you don't even have to put a suture in if you don't want. It's smaller than a two millimeter punch biopsy. And under fluoroscopy, you can either have what's called a side shooter. So the CERAMENT is coming out of the side, which is a bigger bone. Now, if you're doing a metatarsal or a toe, you're going to use a front load where it just shoots out the end of the trocar. So you very simply on the back table have them mix this up, and it mixes up very easy, but it is flowable. It is no more difficult than giving a shot with a steroid, right? Very, very simple, like a Kenalog, very thick. It's very simple. It doesn't hurt. It's easy to do. And very, very simply, it flows through. So the first CC you put in is going to fill the trocar, or half CC, depending on what trocar you're using. The second application you put in is going to put a half CC to a CC in there. Now, more is not better. You don't need to put a lot in a small bone. But what I'm doing is I'm not causing a wound on top of a wound. I'm simply going to the infected bone, and I'm simply injecting it. You wait 8 minutes for it to set up, and then you simply remove the trocar, okay? And I've actually done it with an 18cc needle. Now, I'm not talking about the open case, but now I actually – and you can see it on an x-ray. You can actually see the CERAMENT in there. Now, the CERAMENT G, like I said – you already know, as Warren was just telling you, the elucidation rate, which is really important, it's going to stick around for a while. So I'm very comfortable. Now what happens, the patient may be on an IV. 3 weeks after I've done this procedure, again in my office, I do another bone biopsy. And if that comes back negative, I stop the IV or the oral medication that they're on, because now I'm comfortable this patient no longer has infection. Now, the question becomes, though, if you have multiple bones that are infected, two things. Every bone that's infected gets tested. So if there's four bones or five, or is what I had the other day, 13, all 13, there's 13 different GM sheeting needles that I'm using. Just so you know, I did it all in my office, by the way. And the other thing, consideration is, think of the money we're saving the patient, because I no longer am taking the patient to the hospital to do a 3-minute bone biopsy. I'm saving them maybe $10,000 to $20,000, first of all, and the convenience of being able to do it. And then I'm getting the results back much quicker. Now, with gentamicin or CERAMENT, you don't have to worry about that. But that's one of the considerations. On top of that, I'm not making another wound when I inject the CERAMENT G, because, like I said, I don't even have to make another incision at this point. Now, I've already got it open, because I've done the bone biopsy, so I already have part of the bone that's open. You can go through that, and then I just put the amount in here. And again, it's not filling to the most at all. Half cc in a metatarsal is fine. And simply take it out. Here's the best part: I put a Band-Aid over it. The patient's done with surgery. They get to walk home. They can seriously walk to their car. They can't drive, obviously, after surgery. But there's no limitation on them going back to work if they're not on IVs, or they can go back to work. But I'm not limiting them. And all I'm doing is doing serial x-rays after that. And again, 3 weeks, I'm taking a bone biopsy. And again, I'm testing it to see if any infection is left. On top of that, the next stage is, if it comes back showing still has infection, I take another bone biopsy 3 weeks later. We'd be happy to share all this information on the size, because it's not a big bone biopsy I'm doing. It's the size of an 18-gauge needle. So once again, that's the protocol I'm doing. And I've been very successful with it.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, you're really doing some interesting stuff, and it's unique. And I'd love to have another one of these podcasts sometimes talking about molecular testing, because I think with osteomyelitis, it can play
absolutely
a role, I suppose, for wounds, where we could argue that from now until the cows come home. But, and I also like what you said, and we'll hopefully get to it if we have time a little bit later, the shortening the course of antibiotics, because there's actually been quite a few studies that have looked at using this to shorten the course of parenteral antibiotics. But how you're doing with this outpatient smaller bone is really kind of unique. And it's a little different than, I think, the way Jason's doing it, which is more inpatient. Jason, could you discuss your approach and how you use this particular product for your cases of osteo, what your patients are like?
No, absolutely, Warren, appreciate it. Great examples, Alan. I mean, using it as an outpatient in clinic, I think it's an extremely useful tool. Out here in El Paso, Texas, border town, a huge diabetic population. I'm running around at the hospitals, infections, osteomyelitis, gangrene on a weekly basis. Pretty busy. At least for me, for CERAMENT G, for example, I get a consult at the hospital for a osteomyelitis involving the second metatarsal head with associated deep tissue abscess. So forth, which is, one of the most common things we see from an inpatient standpoint. So anytime I'm dealing with these patients, my thought process is a little bit different. Okay, what can I do to salvage the foot? What can I do to salvage a toe or to salvage the metatarsal? It's, as we all know, as podiatric physicians, we are the limb salvage experts. Anytime we're amputating a toe, resecting a metatarsal bone, there's biomechanics involved with that. There's transfer lesions. The toes start to contract. Next thing you know, with resection and amputation, we set this patient down this long-haul cascade of events with reoccurring lesions, further infection, sometimes more, bigger surgeries, limb loss or whatnot. So at least in my practice, for example, in the inpatient setting, definitely do a good debridement on the patient. Resect any kind of non-viable bone, in addition to thorough irrigation of the soft tissue and abscess. But what I found helpful is the injectable CERAMENT G. Typically what I do, in particular these isolated metatarsal osteomyelitis, I'll inject with a 2.5 drill. I'll drill with a 2.5 drill initially, then I'll go ahead and inject the CERAMENT G along that metatarsal shaft. And I found that to be very helpful, at least in my practice, as opposed as opposed to resecting a metatarsal head or resecting, you know, half of the metatarsal bone, you know, my attempt is to kind of salvage his metatarsal bones in order to preserve foot function. I think that's important because, you know, I always tell my patients, once you cut it out, guess what? It ain't growing back. Okay. It's not coming back. And as we all know, these diabetic patients are biomechanically unstable and you can set off this cascade. So from an inpatient standpoint, I've had success with, you know, drilling these metatarsal bones with 2.5 millimeter drill bits, injecting it with the cannular syringe with CERAMENT G. Like Alan highlighted, it's very flowable. It sets up after you inject it, so we get along that metatarsal shaft. And in some cases, I utilize the, I guess what we call a little egg crate there on the back table with the CERAMENT G, and I also use antibiotic beads. But going back to your original point, yes, my training, we did, you know, tons of PMMA beads. We wrapped them around the proline suture. You know, obviously, we're on the back table putting those together, and, you know, quite frankly, I do surgery, not arts and crafts too much. Some arts and crafts weren't too good, but nonetheless, it's time efficient. It sets up pretty well, at least in my hands, for these isolated metatarsal bone infections, osteomyelitis. I've been, you know, successful in preserving the anatomic structure of the foot. We're, you know, preventing transfer lesions, and, you know, like Alan kind of highlighted there as well, it's, you know, we're keeping these patients off of, you know, systemic antibiotics. That's kind of my ultimate goal. As we all know, these patients are, you know, severely comorbid. They're diabetic. They have severe PAD, renal disease to some extent. And, you know, using a little common sense, you know, with IV antibiotics, if this patient has, you know, these chronic total occlusions below the knee, how is the antibiotics going to get there in the first place? But I think providing this local concentration to isolated metatarsal bones, I think that's, you know, definitely a plus. But for me, at least in my practice, I utilize CERAMENT G as kind of a first line treatment for these inpatients who have, you know, osteomyelitis, you know, involving one or several metatarsal bones. You know, obviously after thorough irrigation debridement, you know, I found it, you know, to be a very useful tool in my attempts at limb salvage and, you know, ultimately preserving foot function. And on another note, I also use, you know, CERAMENT G pretty often with these reconstructive Charcot foot deformities. More times than not, I get a consult for, you know, an active Charcot, but they have a concomitant osteomyelitis involving the plantar aspect of the foot. You do a thorough irrigation, resect some of the bone, pack some antibiotic beads, or inject the infected bone to set up, you know, obviously controlling the infection is your first objective. But I found it useful during my stage procedures. If the patient needs Charcot reconstruction, I can, you know, inject the infected bone previously for a later definitive surgery. So for these definitive stage procedures, I found it helpful, you know, for more of these outpatient cases as well. So I think our objective is always to preserve function, to prevent amputation, at least in my practice, even if it's just a digital amputation. I mean, how many digital ulcers have we seen with osteomyelitis and that contracted hammer toe? And we see them, you know, probably every day in clinic, you know, for those, you know, doing wound care in their practice and to, you know, at least in my practice, we'll debride a wound. And if they're in the inpatient setting, I'll inject a little bit of CERAMENT G along those phalanges and, you know, put a little cap of the CERAMENT G over the top. And it's been very, very useful. And, you know, once again, it's my objective to preserve this foot function and, you know, hopefully prevent amputation. So
I think that's and you said that a couple of times, I think it's an important point. You know, the readership may not be aware. I'm a big fan of evidence-based medicine and following the literature. There's a study that just in fact came out last week by Martin's group out in Sydney, Australia. They did a retrospective look at 136 patients with diabetes, and they found in CERAMENT patients versus what they just called protocolized patients, they found a statistically significant difference in rates of amputation, rates of reoperation, and duration or length of stay. in the patients who receive CERAMENT versus their so-called protocolized treatment. And on top of that, there's another paper that just came out May 7th, in fact. I'm looking at it. You mentioned patients with bad circulation and not getting antibiotics down there. I was never sure I really believed in that. This is a paper from Frontiers in Endocrinology out of Czechia, which is, does PAD and microcirculation status impact the tissue availability of intravenously administered antibiotics in diabetic foot? And bottom line is they came out and said, yeah, it does. You just have a much higher failure rate and with infection in these patients. Let me just touch on one thing. It's come up a couple of times with this whole systemic antibiotics. The buzzword in infectious diseases right now and pharmacy is antimicrobial stewardship. You know, you want to use the shortest course of antibiotics for, you know, the because you want to avoid antimicrobial resistance, which is a global problem. World Health Organization has identified that as a major issue. You want to prevent complications, such as you mentioned renal disease and some other issues. We also C. diff colitis is a major issue when using antibiotics. And I think a drug like this, there was a study out of King's College that showed the average patient with CERAMENT only needed 20 days of systemic antibiotics after that. So let me start, Alan. Most of yours is outpatient. How have you done with your infectious disease people? Do they freak out a little bit when you're not giving them 6 weeks of IV? And then I'd ask Jason the same thing.
So it's interesting. So the patients I see in-house, meaning if it's in the hospital, different story. I do what Jason does. This is very early on, and I want to just bring out a point is, you know, MRIs are very sensitive but not very specific. And the reason I do the testing, the PCR testing, because now I have CERAMENT G. I can use that. I don't. But why I'm doing it is before I treat somebody for osteomyelitis that isn't osteomyelitis, I want to know that. As Jason alluded to, you have Charcot with the, you know, double whammy of having an infection with it. But a good question. So I had a lot of fights with infectious disease. Now, I think as podiatrists, we're uniquely situated that we're comfortable in infection. We don't usually cause them, but we treat them. And like anything else, we're comfortable treating them. ID's offer to me was amputated, cut it off, do a BK, do an ankle, take off the toe.
They still want 6 weeks of IV
Right.
antibiotics.
And then they see exactly, you're taking it off. And you know, I said they said, well, you gotta cut off the head of the snake. And I remember having a horrible argument with an infectious disease because he wanted an amputation, and he said to me, "Cut off the head of the snake." I said, "Well, doesn't that kill the snake?" And I simply, you know, and once they got comfortable with the protocol I was doing with these patients, they started asking for me. So it was just a matter of me saying, "I'll take responsibility for this," and it really was important. And then they started to see results with it. Matter of fact, we're going to publish. We are in the process of publishing 54 cases of patients who we've done this to. So it was just a matter of getting them on board. You know, a lot of times, if you're talking medical legal, which I don't know about you, Jason, but I know Warren and I do, you know, a lot of times you didn't have an infectious disease consult. And I said, I am very proficient in treating infection, right? Type of deal. And I do believe that about us. So this was just the next iteration of being able to have something in my hands that I could jump in on quickly. And like Jason said, you know, we have these patients. The number one reason a diabetic patient is put in the hospital is for diabetic foot infections. It's the number one reason. If we see this coming down the pike, we can keep that patient out of the hospital, right? The number one reason for an amputation is the patient's in the hospital for a diabetic foot infection. And like you were saying about the peripheral arterial disease, if they don't have the circulation, the antibiotic cannot get down there at the numbers that we need to see for eradication. And it makes sense to go right to the source. It's supposed to, you know, I look at it, if we treat the patient systemically with IV or oral antibiotics, that's great. But if we go right to the source, it just makes sense. And it's working. It's working all around the country and all around the world, as Warren just told you about two different papers that just came out.
Yeah,
No,
you know, and I think they're all really great points. But I would point out, unfortunately, I don't think most of our colleagues are as comfortable as you are, as I am, with treating infection. I hear this all the time. When we recommend antibiotics, or when we're talking to a group of clinicians, or I talk to the companies because I work a lot with the pharma industry, and they say, "Well, we talk to podiatrists, and they just say I just send it to ID." So unfortunately, I think we need to take more ownership in treating these infections, because you're right. The average ID is just going to say amputate it and then give 6 weeks of IV antibiotics. Jason, how are you doing with the inpatient setting and, you know, your approach? Are you finding that your IDs are okay with this, or how are you getting them on board?
I mean, I do have a good relationship with them, Warren. I think that's important. You know, we have a lot of overlapping patients, obviously. And, you know, typically most of my inpatients go to surgery, right, for debridement, bone cultures, irrigation, Chairman G application or whatnot. Typically, my infectious disease colleagues, they ask me, what do you think? You know, how's he doing? I mean, obviously, there are some extenuating circumstances where I say, you know what, he's, you know, we kind of minimalize debridement there. I do recommend some IV antibiotics as an outpatient. But what I found with outpatient intravenous antibiotic is a couple of things. One, there's this compliance issue with my patients, okay? They don't get follow-up with appointments with their infectious disease, or they get them confused with me. For whatever the case, they don't get their IV antibiotics, or they don't go to the infusion clinic or whatnot. So there's a little bit of a compliance issue with that, at least in, you know, my patient population. In addition to that, there's, you know, the world we live in, there's some insurance parameters for that, for some of these patients that quite frankly can't get the intravenous antibiotics from an outpatient basis. But to be quite honest, Warren, at least in my hands, I resect them, I clean them, we'll inject CERAMENT G intraoperatively, and I'm pretty quick to prescribe a two-week course of antibiotics orally, okay? And I've done that on the regular, at least with my patients. I see them every week at an outpatient. I debride them. I micromanage them. But I tend to kind of renew their antibiotics every 2 weeks. And, you know, clinically, if the infection is subsiding, clinically, if that wound is granulating and epithelializing, I just kind of monitor. But, you know, at your point, this whole idea of 6 weeks intravenous antibiotic therapy, I don't just quite buy it yet. You know, I'm finding that a lot of
it's patients are not buying it yet. It's a matter of stopping it. I mean, everybody has bought into it, and there's no reason for it. You know, it's the sort of thing we need to just stop. And I think that these alternative approaches, be it PO antibiotics, be it, you know, some of these longer acting intravenous antibiotics like the lipoglycopeptides, dalbavancin, erytavancin, that sort of thing, are changing the paradigm in how we treat osteomyelitis. And certainly using this product, the CERAMENT G, that allows the patient to get these high concentrations of local antibiotics. So we may not even need systemic antibiotics other than to take care of the systemic, if there is a systemic infection on top of the local infection. You know, I've been informed that the average commute in the United States is about 28 minutes. So, and most people listen to podcasts on their local commute. So you're all probably just about now pulling into the parking lot, the hospital, or your office, or your driveway at home, because we're at about 32 minutes now. So I just wanted to take a chance to thank everybody, and I'll just turn it over to Alan and Jason for any final thoughts.
Thank you. I have a question for you, Jason. Yes. Let me ask you. So you said you have Charcot. So once you put the CERAMENT in for osteo, how long do you wait to reconstruct that patient down the line?
Typically what I do is I wait till the wound is healed. You know, a lot of these Charcots are unstable. Sometimes I put an external fixator over the top to stabilize that Charcot first, but or I even put them in cast immobilization. So once the Charcot is stable, once the wound is healed, then we'll consider going back to reconstruct the limb.
So you don't have a 6 week or 6 month window where you go, okay, I'm going to wait this long?
I do not. Once they're healed and once that Charcot is stable, then more than likely we're off to surgery. That's correct.
And the one last thing I want to say, what's really important, is this is such a dynamic change that CMS has approved as of January 2024. CERAMENT is no longer a cost center. They get reimbursed and they actually make a few dollars on it at the hospital. So the hospital actually gets paid for it. And that's an important point to make. This has made such an impact that CMS reversed their decision. And again, as of January 2024, it is no longer a cost center of the hospital. And that is huge. I wanted to bring that out, because if you're worried about the price tag, don't. Because the hospital actually, it gets no harm. Actually, they make a few dollars on it, which they'll be thrilled about. but it doesn't cost them to have you do this. And that's where I'm going to end up. Jason's been great. Warren is always great seeing all of you. And thank you, Bone Support.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, I'll just, you know, sum it up real quick. I mean, at least in my hands, I use CERAMENT G as a first-line treatment, at least anecdotally. We're keeping these patients out of the hospital. We're preventing limb loss, amputation, and I think that's ultimately our goal. So it's just another tool in our toolbox for wound healing and amputation prevention. But just like Alan said, very thankful to be on this talk, and I appreciate everybody's time. Thank you all very much.
That's fantastic. Listen, we could go on for an hour. I know we, in our planning talk, we went on for over an hour doing this. I mean, so we could. And anybody who is still sitting in their car anxiously listening to us to finish up because they didn't want to miss anything, I want to thank you all for your attention. I want to thank Alan and Jason for your fantastic insight into this product and to helping people understand how it can be used. And again, I want to thank Bone Support for helping put this together and ACFAS for putting it out there. I wish you all having a good day. Take care.
Take care.
Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to the ACFAS On Demand podcast, a Convey Med production. Make sure you don't miss an episode. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about becoming a member of ACFAS, please visit www.acfas.org.